It is, yeah. Yeah, right. If you have, it's like intellectual agoraphobia. Yeah, yeah, so.
So now it's just meeting with Dr. Shook on getting things outlined, starting to run.
That's right.
Yeah. Piece of cake, right, Kev?
Sure.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, friends, it's noon here in St. Louis, and we are at Greek Club. We are broadcasting today from high atop Exhaustion Tower. It's week 10 in the winter term, and God is good. He has brought us through and brought us to this good place, and we are reading in Hebrews 11. Hey, Dan. And we're going to start by fixing something that I screwed up really badly last week. Yeah, this was interesting. So we're in Hebrews 11, and it was verse 16 that we couldn't figure out what to do with, all the accusatives and such. But I think I figured it out, and of course, I simply hadn't done enough homework on it. Verse 16, talking about those who have died but not yet having received the full inheritance of the new heavens and the new earth. And verse 16 is, but now they aspire to a greater thing, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, now here was the problem. We didn't know what to do with autus because we kept trying to link it closely to the infinitive epikalestai, as if it were the subject of the infinitive. But I think it has to go like this. Therefore, God, ep aiskinetai, is not ashamed. And then this verb, its deponent, middle deponent, takes an accusative object. So autus is just a direct object of the verb. God is not ashamed of them. And now you do the infinitive. Take it as result, so as to be called, passive voice, quote, their God. And I think that explains why theos is nominative, or I suppose it could conceivably be vocative, right? So that's where we in the sense of I, faltered last week. So autus is just a direct object of episkinemai there. And then the infinitive is passive. We were debating whether it was middle or passive. So I think that's how one can make sense of that. Therefore, God is not ashamed of them so as to be called, quote, their God, for he prepared for them a city. I think that's how we can put that together from last week. So it took me about 15 minutes to figure that out, so I was happy I got that one. All right, and then we'll pick up at verse 17 and read. Now, again, for those of you that partake of Greek Club online, we have our break between winter and fall coming up, so we'll be offline, so to speak, for 2 weeks, and then we'll come back. I suppose it's about the, 8th or 9th of March or something like that?
I think Monday's the 8th, is it?
Yeah, Monday's the 8th and the 9th, Tuesday the 9th of March. So for the hundreds of thousands of people that listen every week to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, right? Okay, verse 17. Oh, what a surprise. Piste, by faith, right? Piste pros enenachen Abraham tan Isaac peiradzamanas kai tan managane pros eferen ha tas ep angeleas ana dexamanas. And we'll get 18 to pros han elalethe hati en Isaac klethesitai soi sperma. So by faith. Now, this is interesting. The writer says, in a sense, he not only says it twice, but he says it in an interesting sort of way. Pros enenachen is actually a perfect indicative active from prospero. Okay? By faith, Abraham has offered. Now, this is odd to me because, as you all know, the perfect stem normally emphasizes the ongoing result of an action. Has offered Isaac, and Isaac is still in an offered state. I mean, but that's what it says, right? So I don't quite know. Maybe he doesn't want us to really emphasize the perfect aspect of the verb, except then we get an imperfect. So by faith, Abraham has offered Isaac while he was being tested, or because he was being tested, something like that. And he, now here's an imperfect indicative of the same verb. And he was offering the only unique one, or he tried to offer the only unique one. I mean, does the writer want us to think of Abraham trying to do it in obedience and then God interrupting him? It's not entirely clear to me, except that we have pros efferen, which is an imperfect indicative active third singular. So, and the subject of it is ha tas epangeleas anadexamenas. The article governs that aorist participle, the one who had received the promises. So this is the subject of pros efferen, and of course it refers to Abraham. By the way, this is a good example. People often point when you're discussing the meaning of monogenes, right? Kevin, this is, you know, close to your, this is your passage, right?
Yeah,
right. So what, in other words, what is denoted as opposed to what is connoted by this? It's not always the only one of a category, but sometimes monogenes, the adjective, simply means unique. Because at this point in the narrative, as you know, Abraham actually has two sons. He has Ishmael and he has Isaac, right? But because of the reference to the promise, Isaac is called the unique one. So ton monogene, right? So he's not unique in the sense that he's the only son, and he's certainly not only begotten, right? But he is unique in that he's the son to whom the promise was attached, right? So in that sense, he is monogene. So doing verse 17 again and then picking up 18, which is much easier. So by faith, Abraham has offered Isaac because he was being tested. And he did indeed, or tried to offer up the unique one. Now, who offered him up? The one who had received the promises. To whom, and Hun probably has as its antecedent the one who'd received the promises, namely Abraham, to whom it was spoken that, and now here comes the citation from Genesis 21, as you can see in the side reference there, in Isaac, seed will be called to you, or for you, literally. And the sense of that is, I think, pretty clear. So, thus far, 17 and 18. Interesting repetition of prospero there. I don't think we've had that before in our litany of the saints, so to speak. Questions about 17 or 18? Anything?
Okay. What does Isaac mean? In Isaac, seed will be called to you.
Well, I think clearly it means you'll have kids, right? But why seed will be called, I don't know. It's because the Holy Spirit inspired it, Will. Yeah, but, yeah. If I knew more about Genesis 21, I might be able to. Seed will be called. Is this a Hebraism? Does anybody know? We'll pretend it's a Hebraism.
So. Oh, maybe because they don't have the word for have or a whole.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right.
Something to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, why it wasn't just the date of a possession, seed will be to you. You will have seed. I'm not sure. Yeah, right. So, okay, good. And the sentence continues. I suppose we should have done verse 19. We have a participle here. So we'll just pick that up. Verse 19, logisamenas hati ek kai ek nekron egerin dinatas hatheas hathen autan kai en parabole ek kamisita. So this participle has to hang off of probably pros efferen in verse 17. We have to hang it off of a main verb. So he did indeed, or he tried to offer the unique one, and then now verse 19, because he reckoned, legizomai, right, aorist participle, middle deponent, because he reckoned that God, now you have to supply the linking verb, is, or in indirect discourse, was dinatas, able, and able requires an infinitive, the so-called epexegetical infinitive, God was able to raise out of the dead. Right? Everybody see how that fits together? So the hutti cause is expressing indirect discourse after legizomai. So because he reckoned that God was able to raise from the dead, huthen, from where or whence, him, Isaac, e kamisita, this is from komidzomai, he received for himself also in a way of speaking, in a parable. See, as you know, parabole doesn't always refer in Greek or mashal in Hebrew, for that matter, to a little pastime metaphorical narrative, but it can mean a riddle, it can mean a figure of speech, and the writer to the Hebrews is using it kind of in that latter sense right here. So he's claiming here, and we believe him, that one of the reasons why Abraham was willing to offer Isaac as a sacrifice is because he believed God could raise the dead. And he says, in a way, in a parable, this is what happened. He received him back from the dead. Although, of course, literally we know that's not true because he never got around to plunging the knife. Right? By the way, in one of the greatest moments in the history of Western art, in the fall term, a student sent me, because I'd been ragging on and on about Precious Moments, you know, he actually sent me a Precious Moments rendering of the Binding of Isaac. It's horrible. You have these cute figures, and there's this cute Isaac on the altar, and the Abraham is like, there's this tear rolling down his cheek. He's got this little cute knife.
Oh,
oh man.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, this is the greatest example of genre contradiction in the history of Western art. So, and all of you out there who like Precious Moments, that's fine. I don't care. So, yeah, I thought that was really, really bad. But what do I know? Questions about verse 19. So yeah, this participle grammatically is hanging off of pros efferen. Right? It gives another reason why he was offering, because he reckoned that God was able to do this. Okay? Good. Okay, verse 20 begins in the familiar way, and maybe we can get 20 and... well, actually, maybe we can do all the way to the end of the paragraph just because it's fairly short sentences and pretty straightforward. So verse 20, we'll do a couple of lines in a row. Piste kai peri melanton eulagesan Isaac tan Yaakov kai tan Esau. Piste Yaakov apathneskon hekastan ton huion Yosef eulagesan kai Prus ekinesen epita akron tes rabda rabdu autu. Piste Yosef tel uton perites exadu ton huion Israel em ne manusen kai periton asteon autu en etelata. So again, by faith, by faith, by faith. By faith also, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning the coming things, or concerning the about to be things, right? Melanton, we'll take it as attributive substantival, right? That's pretty straightforward. Isn't that great? One main verb, a couple of prepositional phrases, and a double direct object.
Here's an example of an instance where you can take something as substantival.
Right. No article on the participle, right. I think the New Testamentalers, the New Testament authors are, yeah, I mean, I think in other Greek you see this all the time, where you have a participle just hanging out in the middle of nowhere, no article to be seen, and you have to decide whether or not it's a substantive, right? Right, and this is a good example. So, and then 21, by faith, Jacob, Now, this is the present participle of apathnesko, which means to die. While he was dying, temporal translation works pretty good. Blessed each of the sons of Joseph. And now this is just a citation from Genesis 47, he worshipped, and I think people normally supply leaning, but literally, he worshipped upon the head of his staff, which probably just refers to the fact that Joseph is really feeble. And again, he's in the process of dying while he blesses the sons of the sons of Joseph there in Genesis 47, as you can see from the side reference. And then again, another nice short sentence in verse 22, by faith, Joseph. Now, as you probably know, telu ta'o can be a euphemism for dying. It means to complete something. You know, it's from the telos, teleao, that stem, obviously. So in English, we say someone passed away, right? I don't know that pass away in Greek, par erchomai, can be a euphemism for to die. But this one is. So we might translate it that way. By faith, Joseph, while he was completing or dying, concerning the exodus of the sons of Israel, he brought to mind, he mnemon euod, and concerning his bones, his asteons, en etelata, this is from entelomai, it's a liquid stem, so you get these alterations in the middle of the stem there, but it's just an aorist indicative middle deponent. Gave orders, he directed. This is the same verb, we just read it this morning in Matthew in the Great Commission. Hold fast to everything that I commanded you to hold fast. So, again, very rapidly now through, what, a couple of hundred years or something of Old Testament history, right? Good. Comment, question, anything on verses 20 to 22? Pretty straightforward. I thought to myself before turning the page, I thought, well, maybe we can finish Hebrews 11 today. And I thought, okay, it goes through 40. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
You said liquid stem is, just so I remember, the liquid stem is a consonant. The final consonant ends in lambda.
Mu, nu, or rho, right?
And it just means that it's going to do weird things.
Liquid stem means that they're from Sheol. Yeah, that's right. There are some patterns to liquid stems. Like, for instance, if you have a double lambda, at least in the aorist, it will often go to a single. Like Balo, our friend Balo, right? Balo goes to Balo, which is, by the way, is another kind of pattern for the liquids that end in lambda, is their future stem often accents like an epsilon contract verb. So Balo goes to Balo with a circumflex, right? And then ebalon, which is kind of strong, and yet you've got go from one lambda to, or from two lambdas to one. Yeah, they're basically bad verbs, and you just have to kind of work on them. But, and the way I remember that is, and I developed these stupid mnemonic devices so that I can teach it, is liminar. So the gutturals are, see, I can still do it. The gutturals are kaguch, and the dentals are tadeth, and the labials are pabuff. And the liquids are liminar. I mean, that's the way it works. Yeah. And so all of my Greek students in the nursing home will know the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, and the liquid consonants. Yeah, liminar. Yeah, right. So, okay. Yeah, from entelomai. Right. So, does this matter? No. Does it make you feel temporarily smart? Maybe. So, okay. Very good. They are, yeah, they're very difficult and very irregular, right?
Does the melantone, or, yeah, melantone 20,
yeah,
does that have some kind of importance with the melantone, agathone, and 10-1?
Boy, you're reaching all the way back there, Kevin. I can't remember what's in chapter 10. The shadow of the coming good things. Maybe. Let's see. The question is, do we put a little bit of a freight, a theological freight maybe, to chapter 11, verse 20. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau about Well, I think in general, yeah, the things that were that would unfold in salvation history.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think so. I'm going to Texas on Friday, I'm happy to say, and there we would translate concerning the things that were fixing to happen. Right. That's right. That's right. So, yes, I'm going to College Station, where Texas A&M is located, being myself a Rice University graduate. So we used to be in the Southwest Conference together, and we would get all parts of our anatomy kicked in football and everything else by Texas A&M. But Jesus loves Aggies. He loves everybody, right? So, okay, verse 23. Piste Moses genethes ekribe trimenon hippa ton pateron autu diati edon asteron ta paideon kai uk ephabethison ta diatagma tu basileos. By faith, Moses, after he had been gana'od, right? So gana'o means to beget. This is the aorist participle passive, masculine singular nominative. After he had been begotten, ekribein. This is from crypto, right? It's a strong six principal part, so there's no theta. One would hope for perhaps ekriphthane. But no, your hopes are dashed. This is aorist indicative passive, third singular. Moses was hidden. Trimenon. You might be able to guess that this means 3 months, and it's an accusative of extent of time. How long? 4 3 months, right? By his parents, right? Now this has always struck me as a strange statement, what we're about to read, but it surely probably carries some cultural meaning about destiny or something. Because what it says is, because they saw, the parents saw, the child to be handsome. So this is why they hid Moses for 3 months, because he was a good-looking kid. Does this mean if he hadn't been a good-looking kid, they would have drowned him or turned him over to Pharaoh or something? No, I don't think so. Well, yeah, I was going to say every firstborn son is good. Well, actually, it was the secondborn, because Aaron is older, right? He's the second son, right? So this must be in some contrast to Pharaoh or something. That's what the lexicon suggests, that he was handsome in the sense of what? I mean, I'm not disputing it. I just don't quite understand all that asteron or asteon might mean there. So, but that's what it says. Because they saw the child to be handsome, right? And so we might call that, well, it's a double accusative. It would have made me happy if we'd had like an infinitive here. But because Astean is a predicate accusative, we can supply the linking verb. And they did not fear ephabetheza. This is the aorist indicative passive of phabeo, which means to frighten. But the passive can just simply mean both be afraid, but then also to fear a direct object, which is why you have this unusual, when you think about it, this unusual construction of a passive voice verb with an accusative direct object. They did not fear the decree, the diatagma of the king. Right? Again, we see it all the time. We're used to it in the New Testament. But phobeo actually means to frighten. And then passive, be frightened. Passive, intransitive, be afraid. New related transitive meaning, fear X. So Dr. Vels actually describes this very nicely. It's a very common phenomenon in Greek verbs, and it's in his not so fundamental Greek grammar, right? So, but easy enough grammatically. Okay, let's do more of Moses. Yeah, we want to talk about Moses quite a bit here. Verse 24. And just looking at my watch, maybe we'll do 24. Hokey smokers, we've got a long sentence here. We'll just do 24 and stop in mid-sentence. Piste Oh, yeah, Will. Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. Yep.
Frightened becomes to be afraid of. Okay. So.
Well, first, to be frightened by someone. Yeah, it goes to frighten, then in passive.
To
to be frightened, okay. And then that becomes to be afraid.
And so you're advocating that this changes meaning a little bit.
Exactly.
It's not like it's acting like the tense is acting upon the original meaning. It's actually changing meaning a little bit.
So it actually shifts from transitive to intransitive, and in this verb, to a new transitive meaning. Right? Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And really, you see a lot of passages. Really, I don't mind actually stopping here because I've never seen it described anywhere as clearly as in Dr. Vilse's grammar. It's not in the first chapter on the passive voice. I think it's in one of the miscellaneous chapters. I wish I could remember which one.
Do you remember what the title is? No.
But you could, if you look up passive voice in the index, where you have a lot of verbs that make the first two steps, that is, you go from a, well, like egero, to raise something, transitive, right? The passive can mean to be raised by someone or just simply to rise, intransitive, see? Now, it's in the lexica, it's all over the place, but nobody has kind of grabbed it together as nicely as Dr. Vilse has. And then guess what? In that particular chapter, he gives you all kinds of verbs that fit into this sort of category of meaning. It's an easy enough semantic step when you think about it. Okay, to be frightened by somebody is not that far from being afraid, right? To be raised by someone is not that far from to rise. But it happens all the time. There's a lot of verbs where you have a passive form, but you end up translating it as an intransitive active meaning. And the lexicon notes this by, if you'll have an entry in the, like on this verb, I'm sure it has an entry, and then it'll have, like number two, passive, and then it'll say, intransitive, and it's signaling to you that that's how you translate it.
So right. Transitive verb can become intransitive, and a transitive verb can become a new transitive verb.
If it goes all the way, exactly. I don't think many of them go all the way the way Phobeo does, but right. So, yeah, I can't think. Well, another example of sunago. Sunago means to gather something together. It's transitive, right? And then it's to be gathered. But then it's just to gather. But it's a passive voice form. Yeah. So really, lexically and semantically, theologically, it sometimes has some payoff. But if you're just kind of interested, which obviously you are because you're here at Greek Club, if you're interested in knowing how the language works, it's really a very helpful little summary. And again, that's why I like to call that book Not So Fundamental Greek Grammar, because there's all kinds of very important little stuff, especially in the miscellanea chapters. So, yep. Okay, all right, well, this is a good place to stop then. We'll pick up in a couple of weeks at Hebrews 11, verse 24. Yep. And the preacher ball had a glorious and gritty end to the season.
It was a fun ending, yeah. We ended it at Ball's house, eating pizza, and
Chewing
breeze.
Yep, that's right.